Can't get enough wrestling talk? Well, check out Ringside Rant with top guys RJ and Justin, the kings of ranting. The new shows drop each Friday morning at 9 Eastern, and it'll take you back to the good old days of pro wrestling, but also the not so good days. Ringside Rant is available on all podcast platforms, as well as full press coverage, Wrestling with Johnners Network, and the Shining Wizards Network. You can also follow the show on Twitter @_ringside rant. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows drop Friday morning at 9 Eastern. That's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. A couple of top guys doing top guy stuff. It's Ringside Rant with RJ and Justin. New shows Friday mornings at 9 Eastern.
It's Friday. It's 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you this week. And introducing your host, he is Cincinnati's favorite son, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, he is the man with the magical voice, RJ. And as always, welcome to Ranters Nation. Welcome back to episode 153 of the Ringside Rant. I am the man with the magical voice, RJ. He is the second most fabulous person in the world, Mr. JD, Justin Davis. What's up, man?
Behind Bret Hart, of course.
Sure, we'll go with that. Okay, fine. Third favorite, or third most fabulous then.
I am good. It's a little bit cold, a little chilly out here now. I'm missing the spring weather that we had last week, but I guess it's coming back. I think it's supposed to be 80 here on Wednesday, which would be amazing.
I hate you so goddamn much. It's going to be 20 here tomorrow.
Yep. So I've bought some flowers to plant, and I've got them underneath the house in my little basement area so that they will not die this weekend, and I will plant them Tuesday or so. So getting ready for spring here in lovely Huntington, West Virginia, and excited to talk about WrestleMania 17, a show that I don't think I've ever watched start to finish until the last few days. So this should be fun.
Well, you're the one of a few that haven't watched it beginning to end. Obviously, you're only watching it for certain parts. But yeah, we overall wasn't too bad of a show. April 1st, 2001, a very pivotal time in the wrestling business. This is coming to us from the Reliant Astrodome in Houston, Texas, before 67,925 people, which ended up grossing in the U.S. for $3.5 million. So just
we have this, and we have a mutual friend that was one of those 67,000 people.
Yeah, at this time he had hair.
Yes, our buddy Efren was looking fabulous there behind JR and King. There's one spot in the show. I think it is at 1 hour, 16 minutes after the Kurt Angle Benoit backstage thing. Yeah. They come back to JR and Heyman, and behind them is a standing up, pointing at the camera, Efren Bjorkvist.
And just to put context to what I said in the opener, he is the most fabulous person in the world.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about
question.
It.
I should have known better. I should have figured Bret Hart would be the second most fabulous and then you, but I'm way down the list. I'm like 300 or something, but no, with that being said, Justin, this is before we get over to Rich, I just want to get your thoughts on it because Houston has become even more of a wrestling town now. The state of Texas in general, because it's produced so many different great talent, going all the way back to the old school with world-class championship wrestling with Yvonne Erickson, shout out to Pondwater Dave, to the Blackjacks, to the Briscoes, Austin, Bradshaw, Undertaker.
Some guy named Shawn Michaels is from there too, I think.
Some guy, yeah. But anyways, the Reliant Astrodome, this was the last major event that was held here at the Astrodome.
Yeah, and I was actually talking to Efren. I said, man, that place looks so cool in the opening when they kind of scanned the crowd with the with the roof and everything. Mm-hmm. It looked awesome. And he said it was absolutely packed in there, and it was a really fun time. He said one guy was standing up in the 700 section, like at the very top, and he had a sign that said, I paid for this seat.
That's probably Pondwater Dave.
That might be one of the best signs of all time. I paid for this seat.
Well, it's one of those guys that pay for like a basketball or hockey ticket that'll like pay for it. That's actually like behind one of the pillars, just sort of obstructed view or something. And it's like $2 or something. But
yeah,
but no, it just to me and to you, whenever you think the Astrodome, you think the Houston Astros, you think the Houston Oilers.
I think of Joe Morgan, former Colt 45 player there in Houston.
So context, Colt 45, that was the Houston, Colt the Astros farm
and
team, right?
Zigzags. No, they were the Houston Colt 45s before they were the Houston Astros.
Correct. Oh, okay. So that was their name before. It wasn't. I could have sworn it was their minor league system team, one of their teams.
I don't know, but I know that was their actual baseball, their major league team before.
I remember that. Yeah.
The Astronomicals.
Oh, Jesus. Just like the Metropolitans, too.
Yes.
But one guy that has one of those most fabulous names is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring to him right now.
It's the opening contest.
You have to go back and look at a lot of these WrestleManias because this one specifically had so many different feuds going within it. You had the Austin Rock one, you had the McMahons, you had the Undertaker and Kane versus the Triple H and Big Show feuds that they had between Raw, SmackDown, all that stuff. There's just so much to unpack here, and it's just unreal. The pay-per-view, the April 1st, this was the first pay-per-view after Vince McMahon bought WCW. Keep that in mind, but context to what kind of times this is in the wrestling business. And they actually make it a point during the broadcast to point out that there are WCW superstars in the skybox. And it's just like, dude, they're like 3 miles away.
Yeah.
And it's just like, Jesus Christ, you couldn't give them any worse seats? How about that guy up in the nosebleeds in the 700s?
And I wouldn't call them superstars. I was looking at them. I'm like, who are these motherfuckers? I don't even remember half of these people.
Well, you had Chavo was there. Stasiak was there. Jindrak was there.
Stasiak wasn't there very long because I think he got fired immediately after that.
Yeah, then he came back as meat.
Yeah.
So nobody beats meat, apparently. Well, I guess they do.
I know Antonio Santos does.
Well, I'd say without question on that one. I'll keep my mouth shut. I'll be nice. But no, the main feud, obviously, of this whole pay-per-view is Austin and The Rock going after the championship, which is held by The Rock at this time. But it seems to be this trilogy. Would you compare, and I hate to use the word compare, but I think it's warranted at this time. Would you compare the Austin Rock feud to something like a Flair Steamboat back in the 80s and early 90s?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think it's more star power, though, than Flair and Steamboat. Steamboat was a fantastic wrestler and everything, but I don't think he was ever a household name such as these two men.
Sure. But you also have to take into account with Steamboat and Flair, there was a full-blown face, a full-blown heel. With Rock and Austin, sometimes it went back and forth. You know, sometimes Rock was a face, sometimes he was a heel. Sometimes Austin was a face, sometimes he was a heel. But it goes to show you, I think this is the second of the trilogy they culminated at WrestleMania 19, which, spoiler alert, we're going to be going over this month towards the end. But they also first started, I believe it was at 15, correct? Where they started the feud at WrestleManias where they'd actually have the titles at WrestleManias. So it goes to show you that you really save these big time feuds for the big time stage, that being WrestleMania.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, this show was just, it was so fun start to finish. A lot of great matches in it, a lot of fun things. I love the gimmick Battle Royal. You know, we'll get into it, but this was fun to watch for me.
But it's just the build with all these matches between, like I said, The Rock and Austin, the build to that, the build, honestly, even the build with between the Brothers of Destruction, The Undertaker and Kane with Triple H and Big Show. Obviously, one of these is not like the other, where Triple H would then end up facing Undertaker and Big Show would be thrusted into the hardcore championship match between Big Show, Kane, and then the inserted Raven, who was the hardcore icon that he was. And ironically enough, it was one of those, this is one of those matches too, where, or excuse me, one of these pay-per-views being WrestleMania, where Triple H and Undertaker really didn't have a match going into it. They had to really find something for them to do, which we'll get into it, but we briefly spoke about it the other night, is Triple H and Undertaker was pretty much one of the better matches on this card.
It was my favorite match on the card. Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. I really did. And you know, I'm usually not a Triple H fan.
Usually not. Absolutely not.
But I really enjoyed that match. I thought it was really well done. So, yeah, there's just a bunch of good stuff on here. We open up, though, with the Freddie Blassie opening.
That's classic, man. I absolutely love that.
I do, too. I thought that was really good. Limp Bizkit is the WrestleMania theme, My Way.
Limp Bizkit is a little bit worse. That'll get a lot of it worse.
Limp Bizkit is all over this pay-per-view, though.
So what – I have to ask this, and I apologize in advance, but was that your nickname in high school?
Still is. especially after half a bottle of bourbon, it's a Limp Bizkit for sure.
Okay. Now put more. Now, what kind of bourbon though?
Oh, Evan Williams all day, every day, baby.
Shout out to Amy.
Yes. Kentucky's best.
Of course. Amy or the whiskey? Or the bourbon?
Both.
Okay, there you go. I wasn't going to let you skate by on that.
Yeah.
But to start off this WrestleMania, two of the legitimate best workers of all time in professional wrestling. Chris Jericho is the IC champion going against William Regal. Two of these guys, they're AEW now, but you have a lot of matches on this card. Is this the right match to start off with?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's a nice little match. You know, Jericho wins with the Lion Salt. But I thought it was the right opener. I always feel like you want two good guys in the ring that you know can put a good match together to open up the show. And that's what they do here.
Now, do you think this was a little bit more mat-based wrestling than I thought there would be going into it? But when you have a guy like William Regal in there, that's something that you kind of have to expect when he's involved in a match or whether he's involved with a program with somebody. Were you pleasantly surprised by that? Or was it something that you like, all right, come on, I'll put it on in the background and watch it when I can?
I mean, I liked it. I love Regal, man. Regal is just so good. His facial expressions are always on point. He's just a great seller. Putting him and Jericho together, it almost reminds you of a Nitro match, you know, back in 96 or 7.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It wasn't the best match on the card by far, but it was just a good, solid opener. You know,
well, and it goes 7 minutes. So I think that was enough time that both of them could get their stuff in. They could get a storytelling, because even leading into this was a storytelling that we saw. I believe this was a time where he peed in his tea or something.
Yes.
The pre-match package that by far, I said this yesterday online, is there's no beating WWE production ever.
Right.
That like 2000 in the 2000s currently. Yeah. I know the current product isn't as good as it was, but mm-hmm. the production value is what sets them apart from the rest of the wrestling promotions by far. But do you think Jericho is the best IC champion of all time?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that going a little...
It's a little too far for me.
You can't include Bret Hart.
Well, I wasn't even going to go there. I was going to say okay. Mr. Perfect was my favorite Intercontinental champion, probably.
Okay.
I loved Mr. Perfect back in the early 90s. There's some guys there that I really love. Rick Rude. I don't know, Owen Hart. I mean, but as far as the greatest, it's the Honky Tonk Man. We all know that.
Oh, you shut your mouth. you, oh my God. You're trying to get me to swear and I'm not going to have any of it. You son of a God damn. Don't you disparage a good goddamn name of Chris Jericho with that, that filth that is the Honky Tonk Man.
But anyways. So then after the Jericho match, we get an APA backstage poker spot, which is always.
That's always good. A classic. Always a classic. Yeah. If you're, because were you watching at this time or did you like.
I think this is when I started to pull out around this time. I was a sophomore in high school.
That's what I heard about you too.
Yeah. I was starting to. I had a job that I worked after school. I also was playing two sports in high school. Just got my driver's license, so I was chasing tail. you know,
weren't we all?
This was about the time that I was starting to not watch, but I think I was still kind of watching at this time.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't remember a lot about it.
Yeah, we'll get into it once we get into the McMahon match. I have something I was going to say towards now, but I was going to save it for that match when we talk about that. But Bradshaw is one of those because he went to North Texas, right? No, he wasn't. He didn't go to North Texas. He went to he was a Texas born and bred. But anyways, you have three Texans in this match
mm-hmm.
with Bradshaw. And Jackie, I believe I could have sworn Bull Buchanan and or the Godfather was from Texas as well, but I may be wrong. I'd have to go back and Google that. But one of these is not like the other, man. When you think APA, you think tough ass people. Do you think of Taz?
I know it was kind of weird. Taz was in this match and he's a tough ass person. There's no doubt.
No,
about
I know.
That.
I'm not saying that. I don't want to get a cease and desist. Hey brother, I'm a tough guy. And he's a Bill, but he's a Bills fan too. So I can't really fault him for that. He is one of my favorite Bills fans. And he smokes some great cigars too.
Well, so this match is Right to Censor, Right to Censor versus APA and Taz. Sure. And I put down in my notes, terrible music versus awesome music because the right to censor, the Right to Censor music is probably some of the worst entrance music of all time.
You got to take context with this. You remember the whole thought process behind Right to Censored?
Yeah.
Back in the day, you remember that? So for those of you that weren't watching at this time, probably Money Mike, because he was probably a swimmer in his mother's stomach. But anyways, Right to Censored was at that time where people were trying to censor the media, trying to censor the company, the Attitude Era, censor that. And this was the WWF at that time way of saying, hey, kind of fuck you, fuck off kind of thing, where you put probably some of the most legitimately risque characters in Val Venus being the porn star, Godfather, mm-hmm. being the pimp. and Stevie Richards, he was just a hardcore badass with the BWO with himself and Nova and Blue Meanie, of course. And then Bull Buchanan, it's like kind of the odd man out. He really wasn't as supposed to be mm-hmm. censored as much, but the pre-match skit we saw with APA and Jackie backstage, I think Jackie was perfectly content and fit so well with Bradshaw and Farouk. And it really shows here. It's like, okay, this is probably one of those matches where China kind of really just gets all these people payday, WrestleMania payday.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the most part. And I pretty much, that's what I think it was.
Yeah. It was kind of an easy, quick little match. APA wins with the clothesline from hell, of course. But little known fact, this was Farouk's only WrestleMania win. Ron Simmons's only WrestleMania win.
Yeah, because he lost at 13.
Yeah, and he lost, I guess, in all his other ones too. But this one here, he finally
I only remember the 13 match.
Yeah, I don't know what else he was in.
Just because we just went over that. That's probably the reason why I'm remembering it. But
yeah.
But so, like I said, 3:53, APA Taz goes over, rights is censored. So then we cut backstage
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. We get a Steph, Trish, and Linda in a wheelchair backstage spot.
And I will say, here's the thing. I will compliment Stephanie, but then I'll also have a complaint about her. Holy shit, was she a great heel and is a great heel character. The heel character, Stephanie. Trying to give tips on how to properly crush ice. It's like, Jesus Christ, are you stupid? What the hell's wrong with this?
I like that. I actually like that. The only thing I had down about this was Stephanie's hair was crimped straight out of, I mean, it was crimped to hell. She had shit all crimped up.
Well, she's got to put some extensions in there too at this time. I think everybody had extensions at that point. But
I think Efren's hair was crimped in sitting there too.
It still is. It's just not on his head. Anyways, but just the character that Stephanie was at this time, man, it goes to show you how good of a character she was at with this whole thing.
Yep.
I think anyways, and it just goes to show you, the in depth that they went with this feud with Vince and Shane, something I didn't really remember liking then. Or even now, it's like, really? I'm like, this is the only place where you can actually find a father beating the shit out of his son and actually making money off of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of beating the shit out of each other, Kane defeated Raven, who is the hardcore champion, and the Big Show in a triple threat hardcore match. Dude, a little bit over 9 minutes.
Yeah, I actually
fuck was it 9 minutes? First of all,
I loved this match, and I was.
You think it was too long? You didn't think it was too long?
No, I was talking to Efren, and he said it was his least favorite match on the card. But if you're there live, I'm guessing that would be because a lot of it was backstage and stuff like that.
There wasn't a lot in the ring,
but in the ring, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. They take it through the crowd into the back. Kane puts Raven through a window, which was a cool spot.
I'll give you that, yeah.
Kane and Big Show go through a wall. Kane gets in a golf cart and runs over a Raven. And the ref in the back of the golf cart was an added touch that I really liked. Like
Jimmy Corderas there, yeah.
Like, yeah, he tells Corderas, get in the back. You got to pin him after I run him over. Big Show and Raven go off the stage. Kane jumps onto them with a leg drop and wins. The ref side counts the box that they jumped onto. Like he stands up and counts three, which was kind of funny. I just thought it was a fun match. I really liked it.
I was just never, and still I'm never a big fan of these hardcore matches. It's just like, you're just going to beat the shit out of each other with whatever you can get your hands on. I get it. There's a point to it, but there's a little bit of wrestling for everybody. This isn't for me. I just think it was a big clusterfuck. You're telling me that you can't find Kane another match? Fuck, they did it the years before, year after with him and Kane, or with him and Angle. And that's the next year at 18 in Toronto. They found something for him to do. Why couldn't they do that here?
He did a lot.
You know what I mean? Why make it a triple threat match?
He went through a wall and he jumped off the stage. I mean,
You know that. So, hey, if you go through a wall, you got to be over, right?
No shit. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm a rare person that actually liked that match. I actually have another cold take here coming up that people probably won't like either, but oh well.
Yeah, you already told me about that, and I'm gonna light your ass up on that one. I think this might be the only pay-per-view, Justin, that we legitimately have two different sides on. Legitimately. Yeah. But that's why it's called Ringside Rant, I guess.
So
but.
Then we, after the match, we see Jimmy Snuka in WWE New York.
Did he really know he was there?
Well, I just hope he didn't kill anyone while he was there. We see The Rock arriving in the locker room to a bunch of boos from the crowd. The crowd reacts to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get our fourth match, which is Eddie Guerrero with Perry Saturn versus the European champion Test. Mm-hmm. Now, this match, I honestly can say, for me, was one of the... I hate to say this because I love Eddie so much, but I just didn't really enjoy this match.
You shut your mouth. Just because Tess is Canadian and his last name isn't Hart doesn't mean you get to shit on him. Well, actually, it kind of does. But anyways, no, this was one of those other matches, too. I'll agree with you to a certain extent, but this was one of those matches where they wanted to get these guys on the card. You know, Eddie and Perry were two of those guys that came over with Benoit and Dean in the Radicals from WCW and jump ship. But I thought it was a good match. It was a low key, great match, if you will. And the one thing I gathered from here is I think Perry Saturn actually went to Efren's closet to get that hat he was wearing. Because that screams Efren. Maybe it's me. I apologize if not, but that was one of those furry hats that I would think that Efren would wear to like Top Guy Weekend or something.
Oh yeah, no doubt. There was a weird spot when Heyman says Texas was stolen from Mexico, and JR says thanks for the geography lesson. I'm like,
Eddie wins after
Dean Malenko comes down and interferes, and Eddie gets the victory and I guess is the new European champion.
So before we get to this next match, because I think we're going to talk a fair amount on it, is the Benoit and Angle match. But what did you think about the pairing of Heyman and JR on commentary?
I liked it. Yeah. I liked it a lot. I felt like JR was on top of his fucking shit in here. I actually talk about that later in my notes, but JR, just, man, this is his prime.
The voice of wrestling, man. Then, now, forever. Yeah, so we see interviewed backstage with Foley, and he basically says he's going to call it right down the line. Him being the referee for the McMahon's match coming up here in a few matches, but Foley needed a payday for this, I guess, you know, yeah. And we'll talk mm-hmm. about that in a little bit, but
yeah. Next match, Kurt Angle and Benoit. I thought I would love this match. I didn't, I don't know why, but I do, there was parts of it that were fine, but I just kind of felt like it was a little boring for me. I don't know why, but I did not love it. I do like Kurt in the all white. I thought that was cool. You don't see him in that a lot. I thought he looked good in that. He gets a cheating win by holding the tights, which is very, felt like 1987. Like, you know, he's holding the tights, you know, it's like,
but you know, it proved the point. Two of the best technical wrestlers of all time. I will agree with you to a certain extent where it wasn't the best match that they ever had, but you know, it's a little over 14 minute match. I think they could have pretty much cut out at least 4 to 5 minutes of this match and still made it a pretty damn good match. But I would have thought that you would like it because a little bit more of a technical match, you being the
I know, that's why I thought I would too, but I don't know why I did not love it.
I just think maybe it was just because Benoit was just so new to the company. Same with, even if you look at it with Angle, he's what, about 2-3 years into the company here.
Mm-hmm.
And Benoit is about give or take a year since jumping from WCW, or no, yeah, about a year, year and a half maybe from jumping from WCW. But it's just like, okay, I thought it was a decent sized match. It was very, very good, but I can see how you looking at it now saying, okay, maybe it's not as good as it could be later on. So,
yeah. After the match is over, we get the classic Kamala on Regal's death spot, which I love. I've always loved that. I don't know why it cracks me up. Regal walks in and Kamala's standing on top of his desk and Kim Chi's trying to get him down. It's good fucking classic comedy shit there.
So that is actually going to be a little, a prediction, a little look into your future at SummerSlam. That's kind of probably going to be Frank Bruno jumping on top of the table there at one of the shows.
Rubbing his belly.
He wants me to touch his moon.
He wants me to touch his moon.
I bet that's a shirt right there, folks. But anyways, you see the segment there of the guy, everybody going to Fort Hood here in Texas, pay homage to the troops. We know where that would end up going with tribute to the troops later on. But we see Benoit attacking Angle backstage during this interview that he had, which I think it continues the feud. It's not done. Mm-hmm. And I think to your point of saying, hey, it wasn't as good as a match, I think that this kind of made a little bit better because you knew it was going to happen a little bit more, have a couple more feuds, have a couple more matches going forward.
Yeah.
Is that how you took it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You could tell they were trying to keep it moving with the backstage stuff afterwards. Which this is the point that we see Efren on the TV.
Exactly. And then we go to China and Ivory.
China and Ivory. Now this one was just basically a China squash match.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of what I got out of that. Not a lot to it. But it is what it is.
But the thing was, it was sort of to prove, it was great because it proved it to showcase how good China was and how good she will be after this as well. So, you know, like I said, it was a cross match, a little over 2 minutes. So you're not going to get much context out of it. So Cole gets Vince's response to the events of Shane buying WCW. And he's quote says, if you want shocking, you just wait. Mm-hmm. So a little precursor, is that going to be for his match or somebody else? We'll get to that, obviously, as we go forward. So we have Foley coming out as a special guest referee for this next match, the street fight between Shane and Vince McMahon. 14 minutes, man. Do you think that's enough? Or do you think it should have been shorter?
I thought it was great. I thought it was perfect. The crowd was so into this match. This is really when, from here on out, you can tell the crowd is just pumped. You know, not so much in these last few matches, but from the start of this match to the end of this pay-per-view, the crowd is on their feet pretty much the whole time. They popped so huge at the end when Shane jumped all the way across the ring and hit his dad with that jump kick into the trash can.
Coast to coast from post to coast.
The fucking crowd just went nuts when that happened. When Linda stood up out of the chair kicked. The funny thing was Vince had his legs together. He was holding that trash can up and he had his legs together. And he's like, oh, fuck, I better spread my legs. And so he spreads his legs. He spreads his legs and then Linda fucking kicks him in the balls. It was just a really fun match, really fun story to tell. I thought it was really good storytelling. Thought it was just fucking fantastic.
But who would have thought that Linda would get as big of a pop for just standing up? Keep in mind, for those of you that aren't familiar with this or haven't seen this, Vince is at this time that the genetic jackhammer, basically going with anybody and everybody female wise. At this time he was courting, we'll say, for better use of terms, Trish Stratus. So then he was basically medicating Linda so she wouldn't realize where she was or all that. Yeah. It goes to show you that really doesn't stand up to today's standards, obviously, but.
He should have medicated her when she tried to run for U.S. Senate. That
too. That's another story for another time. But one of those things, too, where I just saw it's just like, dude, they're just firing off the hip, just beating the shit out of each other. You see Shane doing the whole spot with the table, going through the table at ringside, all that shit that we'd come to see later on. And this is pretty much the start of Shane at WrestleMania's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just the matches they would have with so many different people.
Yeah, man, I loved it. The crowd loved it. They loved the ending. And I think it's in a perfect spot in the show. Although, now you go right into this next match, which
you're going to shit on this and I'm going to, dude, fuck you. Okay, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead. All right. I'll let you say your piece.
Tables, ladders, and chairs. We have Edge and Christian versus the Hardys versus the Dudleys. This is obviously the second tables, ladders, and chairs match. They had the first one at SummerSlam. I know that for most people, this is their favorite match on the card. Efren included. This was his favorite match. I hated it. I don't know. The crowd did lose their shit when Howard introduced the match. He's like, this is a tables, ladders, and chairs match. And the crowd fucking went nuts. However, for me, it was just spot after spot after spot after spot. It was just very spotty. And I don't know. I didn't like it. Didn't love it at all.
Do you think, and I get what you're saying, because you see a lot of that stuff nowadays with the Young Bucks and the tag team division, spot fest, spot fest, spot fest. And, you know, I know it's one of Jim Cornette's favorite matches of all time, being the Spot Fest USA. But do you think it was just because, why it was a spot fest, that is? Do you think it's because it was a ladder match? Or do you think it was more of the competitors?
I mean, because of the chairs or the tables and the ladders, and you got to set everyone upright, and you got to go, and then we go through a spot, and then we do it again. I loved it when the Dudleys were in the middle of the ring, and they're like, get the table, and, you know, they go. And I mean, there were some fun spots to it, but it was Efren did tell me, and he's right. He said, now it looks very spotty. However, back then, we'd never really seen it before, so we loved it.
Because you couldn't really compare it to anything.
Right.
Where nowadays, and that's the main difference that you will see, because a lot of people, a lot of wrestling fans, think they're smart. And they'll look at this match, this TLC match, and compare it to every goddamn ladder match, Spot Fest USA from the Young Bucks or whatever. I'm just saying that because I just like shitting on the Young Bucks, but two different times, man. You can compare nowadays, you can compare this stuff to everybody and everybody because everybody does it.
Mm-hmm.
In 2001, there was nobody doing it. Maybe, you know, you're looking at ROH. Maybe you're looking at some of the overseas stuff in Japan because WCW wasn't involved in here. ECW wasn't involved. So you didn't really have it to compare to anything where you do now, where you have, like, you compare the Young Bucks stuff to, you know, the Uso stuff and the Uso stuff to the New Day stuff. It's just a trickle down effect.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to all the GCW stuff that it has. But the one spot that I absolutely loved was Edge and Jeff Hardy ladder spot, where Edge spears Jeff Hardy off of the ring where the belts are.
Yeah.
And that is something that has been shown time and time and time again. And I love it each and every time. I get goosebumps just because I'm with Efren, where this is my favorite match on the card. Second match, I should say.
Well, but anyways, you know, there was a botch on it when Jeff Hardy tries to walk across the ladders and falls on the last one.
If you listen to, I believe it's the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy with friend of the show, John Elba, they actually go over this. I forgot which episode it was, but they actually went over it when Jeff was with him. And they actually he actually practiced it and mm-hmm. hit it before he went into the ring and right. do it. And it's one of those things where you can practice as many times as you want. Yeah. And it's just different times. You have the adrenaline going. Shit's going to happen, especially in a ladder match. Expect anything.
Yeah.
Expect the unexpected in a ladder match. And even more so in a TLC match, because you had the ladders for the Hardys. You had the tables for the Dudleys. And you had the chairs, the concerto for Edge and right. Christian. So mm-hmm. you have a different thing from each individual tag team. The one thing I did not like of this match was involving Rhino with Edge and Christian, Lita with the Hardys, and Spike with the Dudleys.
Yeah.
And that fucking chair shot that Spike took from Lita, the headshot. It's like, mm-hmm. now, the things that we know now about post-concussion syndrome and all that stuff, the head trauma.
The tornado, really... the one thing that Spike did do, that tornado DDT off the turnbuckle into the table.
With Christian, yeah.
That was a good, I did like that little move yeah. there, but I don't know. And like you said, bringing in three more people into a match that already has six.
Yeah. That was the only thing I didn't like. That was too much.
You know, yeah.
But
as Dave Silva would say, that's too much.
Shout out to Dave Silva. Good man. Anyway, so we got we have three more matches, because this next match is, I don't want to spend too much time on this, because it was what it was.
I do. It's my favorite thing that happened.
Of course you do.
I love the gimmick battle royal. First of all, you bring out the fantastic Mean Gene and Bobby Heenan come out.
I'll give you that. Okay.
Fucking loved seeing them in WWE in 2001. I mean, is this one? Yeah. 2001, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. When they were just on WCW TV a few months ago. And seeing them come out, Mean Gene, his voice, man, if you had to make, like, create an announcer, mm-hmm. his voice would sound like Mean Gene. Like, he has the perfect announcer, you know, guy on the mic. The Bushwhackers come out in some updated outfits, some new Bushwhacker.
Of course you'd go after the gear. Of course you would.
Bushwhacker 2000 is what I call that.
Sure.
The crowd goes silent when Duke the Dumpster Drosy comes out. They're like, who needed him to come out here? No one. I fucking love Kamala. Always. He comes out. It's so great. It's just good, like I said, to hear Bobby and Gene together. They were riffing the whole time. Gene's voice, like I said, just so fucking perfect. Hillbilly Jim comes out and looks the same. Somehow he didn't age in 15 years.
Apparently,
he looks better than he did, I think, in the late 80s. Like, what the fuck? The crowd popped for Slaughter's entrance. He came out last.
I feel like Brother Love. Come on, man.
I felt like Earthquake should have won this bitch. Like,
he was one of the first ones out.
I know. I was like, what the hell? Brother Love got some offense in on the goon. I was like,
don't forget, he got some. If you look at it at the beginning, I will say this: he got a lot of offense in with Cornette too. They automatically went right to each other. I'm like,
Brother Love was
God,
beating ass. I'm like, where did this come from?
Because he didn't get his order right at the burger place. That's why.
And Brother Love made it to the fucking final four.
Oh my God! Of course, he probably booked that shit. That's why. Yeah. See, I'm going to be the final four.
And then Sheik wins, despite the fact that he can barely move.
If you listen, I think Bruce has talked about it before, or somebody has, when they went over this, is you couldn't get Iron Sheik over the top rope and make it to the floor safely.
No.
There's no way. So that's why he won, and that's why Slaughter came in and gave him the Cobra Clutch afterwards to really... Yes.
Slaughter comes back in, and Gene gets all excited and tells us to Katie bar the door, which is just classic Gene. I love it.
But if you grew up, if you're the same age as Justin and I, and you grew up at this time watching Gene and Bobby, you had to pop so hard and get those goosebumps when you're watching this. This is one of those pay-per-views that if you like the nostalgic, you're going to get it in this WrestleMania. So our next match is the Undertaker taking on Triple H.
Yes.
So
as I said before, my favorite match on the card.
You said last night, we talked about it the night before, that this was your favorite match. And I get it. It was a decent match. It was probably one of Triple H's, and I will say The Undertaker's better matches on WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, obviously we'll know what Undertaker will do with Shawn Michaels going forward. So we knew with that and then Triple H as well. But dude, what a fucking tough match, man. This was a fucking barn burner.
From the beginning, Motorhead singing the game music for Triple H as he comes out was fucking amazing. I loved that. I loved it. Although it was about as long, his entrance was about as long as Shawn's at WrestleMania
13. Oh, God damn. You had to fucking bring that up again, didn't you, son of a bitch? God damn it.
I'm not a fan. This is the one downside for me. I was not a fan of Taker coming out to Limp Bizkit.
No, neither was I.
And I was never a fan of the American Badass gimmick. I know a lot of people, that's their favorite version of The Undertaker. For me, it's my most hated. I don't know why. I never liked it. I want the Undertaker. You know, right.
American Badass music.
Yeah.
Not the fucking Limp Bizkit bullshit. Yeah. I just hate Limp Bizkit.
I thought Undertaker moved so well in this match.
And you can see it though, but he's also working with somebody, you know, he'd be facing Flair the next pay-per-view or next WrestleMania, but this Triple H, they just work so, so well together over their whole careers. And shout out to Triple H on his retirement, obviously unfortunate, but officially retired from in-ring competition. And then Taker is going into the Hall of Fame as well. So, but dude,
Triple H looked fucking amazing here too.
Oh, like, my far best. I think this is the best shape that they were ever in.
And Mike Chioda appears to be in the best shape of his life too in this match. I looked at Chioda. I'm like, God, look at Chioda. He's fucking ripped.
Well, he was always but he was getting into the pushing fight with Triple H. Then he took a big ass fucking bump into the turnbuckle.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He gets into a shoving spot with Triple H. Just great match, great choke slam off the fucking camera tower
into the crash pad.
And then Undertaker jumps off and elbows him. The crowd breaks out into a holy shit chant at that point,
Which you didn't hear that much at this time.
No,
that was like the start of it here, really.
But just a great fucking match, fun match. Undertaker finally wins, you know, but I loved it. I thought it was great. Not too long.
And this was perfect. It was about 15 minutes, give or take.
Yeah.
And we saw Triple H institute the whole sledgehammer into the match. So what would you name your sledgehammer if you had one? Like Triple H?
Sledgehammer.
What would you name it? Sledgy?
I don't know. Maybe just Paul. Okay. For Paul Levesque. Sure, this is Paul.
All right. So we're going to head to the main event here. You got your champion, The Rock, taking on Stone Cold Steve Austin in their second of three matches in this trilogy. I thought 28 minutes, man, I thought it was a little long.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want everybody, and we talked about the spot fest and the tag team match. The one thing I will say about this is there's so fucking many false finishes.
Mm-hmm. There is a
people
lot.
People kicking out of, you know, each one of them's kicking. Kicking out each other's finishers, kicking out of chair shots to the head that we'd see later on. You'd see people getting kicked out, getting hit in the head with the bell. Both these guys are busted open. Do you think it was just too much?
I actually felt like it was fine. I did not hate it. You know, for Rock and Austin, you want to have a good, solid, long kind of match to where you felt like this was a battle till the end. And it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, my notes I have on this, first of all, not a fan of Austin's music here.
No.
Why the fuck change it? Everyone loves the glass
breaking. The original glass breaking.
Yes. Why change it? I just don't get that. They're fucking around with too many people's music. Undertakers, Stone Colds, like, fuck it, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Very physical, fantastic match, I felt like, though. I love the WrestleMania 13 callback when Rock puts a bloody Austin into the sharpshooter.
I saw that, too, yeah.
Austin then puts the rock in the sharpshooter, but it's shitty. It was
They're
not
both
good.
Shitty. Let's be honest.
They're rock was better than Austin.
And that's saying a lot because Rock's sharpshooter was terrible too.
Earl is starting to get a little pudgy in this. I noticed he's starting to get a little chunky.
Of course, old, you'd say that.
Earl Durrell. Austin puts he puts the Rock into the $1 million dream, mm-hmm. which I
like
loved.
That spot.
I love like that callback. The Rock, gets out of it just like Brett did at Survivor Series 96. Goes off the turnbuckle and flips over. Nice little callback there too. The Rock stuns Austin. The crowd goes fucking nuts. Vince comes out, then pulls Rock off of Austin after a people's elbow. JR on top of his fucking game here. He went nuts when Austin rock bottomed Rock. They both gave each other their finishers. Austin rock bottomed Rock. Rock stunned. Austin. Yeah. The crowd went from cheering Austin to popping for Rock after Vince came out and helped Austin, of course, and hitting Rock mm-hmm. with a chair. Mm-hmm. They go nuts when Rock kicks out of the fucking stunner. Austin wins after repeated chair shots and the heel turn alliance with Vince.
And JR's really selling Austin aligning himself with McMahon. They really are.
Yeah.
And this is pretty much culminating, I think. And rumor out there says a lot of people think the same way. It's really putting an end to the Attitude Era with Austin aligning himself with McMahon. And I think that's fair enough to say. Correct me if I'm wrong. Shoot me at a tweet at _ ringside rant if you want. But I really think that that's pretty much what killed the Attitude Era right here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That and even the acquisition of WCW as well. Killed the Attitude Era because it pretty much ended right here in 2000, if not 2002.
The Vince versus Austin thing was basically the carrier mm-hmm. of the last few years, and now you've got them together. And I think people just they puked it back up. They did not like it.
No, they did not like it. So overall, Justin, we would see Austin become the champ here, line himself with McMahon. Overall. As a whole, the whole WrestleMania event, how did you enjoy it? Obviously, you had your point, your good points, your bad points. How did you view this as on the whole as a pay-per-view?
I would give it a 9 out of 10. I thought it was really good.
If it was in the Tokyo Dome, it would have been 12 stars.
Right, but as far as WrestleMania goes, one of the best, in my opinion, that there is. Obviously, a lot of people rank it number one, mm-hmm. And it might be. I have my other personal favorites, but very solid. Very, mm-hmm. very solid. I liked it.
You know, somebody else who... No, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, somebody else that's very solid is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's send it up to the ring to him right now.
It's listener questions.
So it is time for some listener questions, Justin. Ladies first, as always. So you know what that means. It's Top Gal Amy time. She asks, which do you prefer? The TLC match at WrestleMania here, or the TLC match at SummerSlam 2000?
I'm going to go SummerSlam off of my opinion here, but what do you think?
I'm going to say this match here at WrestleMania 17 just because of it was a bigger stage. Two, I think the fans got the TLC match here at WrestleMania. They got it over more. Just by their reactions. Not to say that the SummerSlam 2000 match was bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just thinking the TLC match. I'm saying the TLC match here at WrestleMania 17 was better as a whole. Bigger stage, bigger arena, and better. I think it was better wrestling. You know, you said obviously with the spots, I get that, but you're going to be getting that in ladder matches. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't have anything to compare it now, so you can't really, we'll keep the current product opinions out of it, but you didn't really have a lot to compare it to at this time, like we said, because you didn't have WCW, you didn't have, you know, you don't have an AEW, you don't have an Impact, you don't have, you know, New Japan, you don't have other WWE, NXTs, all that stuff to compare it to now. So, so thank you for that, Amy. Our next question comes from Brian Haremza. He asks, is the TLC match the greatest tag team match in WrestleMania history? Tag team match. Keep that in mind. He didn't say TLC match. He said tag team match.
Yeah. I mean, might be. I can't think of anything that off the top of my head, any like fantastic.
I don't think so either. I think this is the best one because there really wasn't anything notable. You know, you can't go back to, I believe it was WrestleMania 4. We had the Brain Busters and Strike Force. You can go because that was a decent match, but nobody really paid attention to it. You had LOD Demolitions. Those matches are great, but I don't think
Nasty Boys and the Heart Foundation.
Oh, fuck the Nasty Boys. But I don't think you can really compare it. I think this was the best tag team match until somebody else proves me otherwise. You get, like I said, DM me, DM Justin, tell us, let us know what you think. Because I think that this was the best tag team match. You can go back to WrestleMania 2000, WrestleMania 16 there, when they had the ladder match with these same three teams. That was a decent match. But WWE at WrestleMania aren't known for their tag team matches. Yeah. You would have to go to a secondary pay-per-view, whether it be SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble even, to have a good tag team match. Case in point, the SummerSlam 2000 match. That would come close, but it's not a WrestleMania match. You would think that they would save these great tag team matches to WrestleMania, but that ceases to exist anymore. We can even go when the Hardys came back there at WrestleMania. I was just watching that video the other day when they came back, and that was that they turned the Fatal Five-Way tag team match where they won the tag traps there when they came back after being gone for so long. But I think this is the best tag team match that we're going to see at WrestleMania. All right. So Mr. Brad Stanton is next. His questions are, Austin thought that he thought Austin was losing some steam and the change of the character was necessary. Do you think that he actually was losing steam here at this point and that's why they switched everything over?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's I agree with Brett's point there. He was kind of losing steam as the babyface character that he was, and I think he felt that, and that's why he wanted to turn heel. It was his idea, not anyone else's. So I just felt he must have felt that in his own, you know, on his own.
Sure. A new coat, or a new paint of coat, if you will, or coat of paint, or whatever you want to say it. So his last question, I had to put it in here because it was kind of a funny question. He asked, Righteous Censor had on dress shoes in this match. Do you think they were working dress shoes or did they hurt their feet?
Yeah, they're kind of pulling off that IRS look.
Yeah, kind of really didn't do too well. But we'll leave that to, we'll leave that open. We can, I think they're working dress shoes. So, Mr. Devin Dowling is next, the devilish one himself.
Devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what.
It's about time his lazy ass got a question in. Where have you been?
Well, I think he was still trying to like dig out or bucket out or whatever you want to call his flooded basement again. He asked, could you agree that this was Triple H's greatest WrestleMania match?
Yes, for sure.
I don't. The only other one that would come close was the Hell in a Cell match that he would have later on with The Undertaker, with Shawn Michaels as a special guest referee, kind of the end of the era kind of match where you kind of play up that nostalgic feel with the three of them in the ring at the same time. And then on the stage at the end, where that was legitimately the last time that any of them would have wrestled on the same card again, pretty much in decent fashion anyways. So I would say that would be the next closest one, I believe. So we get Eddie Prather is up next.
I actually think his best WrestleMania match was when he got squashed by the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, fuck you. I knew you were going to say that. I was waiting. I'm like, no, he's going to say something. No, he's not. Okay, now he is. So up next is Mr. Eddie Prather. He says, how much damage do you think was done to Steve Austin's momentum with his failed heel turn? I believe it was one of the two biggest failed heel turns ever. This one and the Road Warriors failed heel turn in the late 80s. What did you think? I'll get my opinion after you, if you don't mind.
I think he's right. It did. It went over like a fart in church, and I've led a few of those. I know how that can go. But
when you sit on those pews, it's like, it vibrates the whole fucking church.
Yeah,
anyways,
I don't mind it watching the match. I kind of feel like it goes together, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Here at the end of WrestleMania, I felt like it's kind of what should have happened. It made sense in a way, but sure. Then it just didn't go anywhere. Liked it. Yeah.
Well, but it went somewhere though. I don't think it was a failed heel turn because then he would join the Alliance.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was a complete fail as much as Eddie would lead on here, but I don't think it's just to compare it to the Road Warriors either in the 80s, because in the 80s it was like, okay, we'll throw it against the wall, see if it sticks. But I think I don't think it was a complete fail.
I think Eddie
was it bad? Did it not get over? Yeah, I'll admit that. But I think eventually it got over.
I think Eddie's heel turn was a fail too, but that's a whole other issue.
Well, that's another conversation for another show, and we don't have enough time in the day for that. So somebody that we do have time for is the money man himself, Money Mike.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talks.
Here comes the money. Money, money, money,
I wanted to say that before when you had your finger in your mouth there, so you wouldn't say anything. So believe it or not, he only has one question this week. So I think you're actually intimidating him, Justin.
Good.
Son of a bitch. I'm sorry, Mike. I can't. I'm trying, Michael. I can't. Justin's his own person. He's his own man. And I actually
text him some behind the scenes material yesterday. I text him a picture of a page of my notes. I figured
God. So that's why it was only one question, because all the other shit you're gonna say anyways. So his question is, and it's a very good one, he's asked, should the WWE have waited until after WrestleMania 17 to announce the purchase of WCW? And he says, to me, announcing it before seemed to overshadow WrestleMania.
Well, here's the thing though, I think you have to announce it when you buy it, because everyone's gonna know. So if you don't, if you wait weeks to announce it, mm-hmm. I think it would be weird since everyone already knows you bought it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean to a certain extent, but I think it still overshadowed it a little bit. I think they could have waited another week, because then that would have really kicked off. You know, everybody says the night after WrestleMania is the best night ever of the whole year. Why not start it here and be like, hey, we'll start it after the night after WrestleMania, because the WCW stars at WrestleMania went over like a fart in church as well. It's like nobody fucking knew who the hell they were.
I do think it might have helped buys, because WrestleMania is happening right after WWE bought WCW. So you think, you know, who's going to be there? Sting or Goldberg or something like that. So
no, I know to that point, I get that point, but it's just like, okay, come on guys, we can wait a little bit, but with that being said, thank you, Money Mike, for the questions. Thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in, or excuse me, asking questions, not tuning in. We're not done yet. Fuck that. So thank you for asking your questions. You can do it each and every week at _ringside rant. Just DM them over to us and we'll make sure that it makes the cut. So with that being said, it is some of our favorite segments each and every week. And we've actually successfully made Ms. Amy happy with our picks the last couple of weeks. So hopefully this week,
Our luck's going to run out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going over this. And then she's just shit all over. She'll send us explicit fucking DMs this week, I'm sure. So let's send it over to Elijah to hit the button.
Let's get musical. Let me hear your body talk.
And I think that Elijah just got a raise now because he said Amy's pissing him off too because he's doing a great job and she has not mentioned his name once. So he deserves a raise. So I guess we'll give him a quarter raise this year. So with that being said, Justin, top five hasn't changed. The top 10 hasn't changed. It is Steve Austin, NWO, The Undertaker, Bret Hart, and Demolition running up the top five. You're adding another list, another to the list this week. Who do you got?
We both have tag teams this week. We're in some tag team music, but I have APA, the Apocalypse. What's her name?
Acolyte Protection Agency.
Yes, that's it. But two big badasses with some badass music. I always like this music, so let's hit it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I love the wailing part in it. That I always like that.
But it was all well and good after one of them. It's like you get to bump. I'm like, this is the only thing that reminds me of is when I piss off my wife. This is the music that plays in my head when I have to think of what do I want to say next. And this is like, you know, you'd hear the Jeopardy music. When I hear this music, I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it fits their tag team well. It's kind of a hard-hitting.
I definitely agree with you on that, yeah.
Hard-hitting song that, I don't know. I just always liked it. I thought it would be a fun one to throw in here. And in honor of Ron Simmons' only WrestleMania win, we played APA music.
So with that being said, I'm thinking if you're looking at my screen right now, Justin, that's where I think it should go. I think it should go right about 30, right above Eddie Guerrero and WWE and underneath DDP. I can even get with putting it a little bit lower between Eddie Guerrero, WWE and Mankind's heel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you were thinking it could go.
I think 30 is fine.
30 is good.
I think that's about right.
Okay. Now, and I get that too, but it's one of those things where I consider that very monotonous, very repetitive. And I like the squeal right off the bat, but it was kept on going. Maybe if they changed it up a little bit, maybe it would be up a little higher.
Yeah.
And I will agree with you where it fit them very, very well. And when you hear that music, you think of APA. You think of Ron Simmons and Bradshaw. I get that. But it's like, okay, is it really that noticeable? Is it that good? Is it whatever?
What a tag team those two were, man. I mean, just two fucking bulldogs just beat the fuck out
just
of you.
Badasses.
Yeah. One of the best tag teams, really. I think they're underrated a little bit.
But my pick this week is another tag team, yes. But legitimately one of the best tag teams of all time. They were one of the teams in the TLC tables, ladders, and chairs match. They are the Hardys, my friend. And this is a theme music that we actually are hearing currently in AEW. So that was a little precursor to what we may have our strong opinions on. So with that being said, let's hit it. So I played a little bit longer on purpose because yes, I know what you're going to say. It's very repetitive.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I don't think you were going to say it.
Okay. Maybe I was wrong. Okay. Shit.
I don't think it's that bad. It's a good beat. It needs to be in there. And they go through that little bridge there right before you cut it off. And then they come back to it.
Yeah.
I liked it. I really like it. I don't know that I could put it in our top 10, but I think it does deserve to be in the top 15. That's where I would put that.
So I think otherwise. Okay. With a lot of things on this pay-per-view, I'm shocking, I know. But if you're looking at the screen, initially I would put it there at number 9. Right under Ric Flair, right above the Four Horsemen. I get that you don't think it's top 10 worthy.
I think where I would put it, and maybe we can split the middle here. Sure. I would put it right behind LOD and at 13. So
why? No, see, I great minds think alike, sort of.
Or at 12, I guess that would be 12.
Because I was even thinking about it, putting it between Dusty and LOD.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially, because it was still, I think Dusty at that time, Dusty's music fit him a lot better than this music did for the Hardys. Yes, when you hear this music, you think Hardys. But... Mm-hmm. The only reason why I don't think I can agree with you where it's not top 10 is because it's stocked music. It's not original music. It's not Jim Johnston's. That's the only reason why I could potentially have put it out of the top 10, but I think it would be close enough where we'd have it here at 11.
Okay.
To give them enough gusto because it is great. I think it's one of the best musics. Theme music of all time.
Well, there you have it. We had someone knocking on the door of the top 10, but they get shut out and
they couldn't write in.
They write in the number 11, which is still out of 50 something songs. Number 11 is a good number.
Yeah, we are at 54 total right now, Justin. So we are we're really hitting it strong here, man. We really are. It's actually getting over, believe it or not. Because a lot of people, I'm sure we're getting a lot of shit this week for putting that at 11 and not in the top 10. But I think our reasoning behind it is just.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it deserves to be where it is.
Yeah, it's great. It's great music, no doubt. Is it as good as like Demolition or Harlem Heat? Not for me. Yeah.
Right. I don't think so either. But... Let us know what you think. I'm sure you will, Amy. And I'm sure you will, everybody else that will crap on our where we put these two theme songs. You can hit us up at _ringside rant or at JD2040 or you can just simply go over to castbuy.com/ringsiderant. That's our website there. It has all our links for all our platforms we're on, all our social medias, ways you can get a hold of us, a way you can support the show with a great shirt I am wearing from whatamaneuver.net. Justin, we're in that month where it's WrestleMania season. We're going to be doing something special this week, or excuse me, this month. We're going to be going over our best WrestleManias, i.e. this week with WrestleMania 17. Next week, we're going to be going over one of our worst WrestleManias that of all time. We're going to be going over WrestleMania 9 from Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, Nevada. I think it was Paradise. Is it Paradise, Nevada?
Anyways, I don't Caesar's know. Palace. All I know is it wasn't Paradise. The show was not Paradise.
And I will say this much. Bret Hart was not in Paradise.
No, this is my pick for one of the for the worst. Mm-hmm. And there are some good things about this show, but overall, I just feel like they fucked up the ending so bad and all kinds of other things. So it'll be fun to talk about.
Yeah. So stay tuned to that. We're going to be announcing. We're not going to say it right now because we want you to anticipate this fantastic pay-per-view we're going to be going over next week. We're going to be going over two other WrestleManias the rest of the month as well. So stay tuned for those announcements as well. So, Justin, it's almost baseball season. You got anything about the Reds, or are you going to still go all in with the Bengals?
I have nothing to say about my beloved Cincinnati Redlegs.
Well, well, at least they're shipping off their whole fucking team now.
Yeah. I am now into umpiring. I umpired two baseball games yesterday in 37 degree weather, which was
in the snow, you said?
Yes. Not any type of fun. No. But now the only thing I got is go Peacocks. Strut your stuff today, Peacocks. Get your asses into that Final Four.
And we'll see you right back here in Ranters Nation next week.